Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Okay, we spent the whole first hour. Hope all of you are having a good time, not surprisingly, breaking down what happened in the AFC and the NFC championship game. And I want to, as we kind of circle back around here and think about the larger context of both of these games, tell me that the coach who coached most aggressively didn't win both of these games. And what I mean by that is, we know that these coaches and everybody who is affiliated with the teams, by the time you're getting to the AFC and the NFC championship game, particularly in this COVID year, more so than any other, and we probably should give the NFL a tremendous, tremendous credit for being able to not only play their season, but to play all 32 teams, all 16 games, and now to have 2 weeks to get ready for the Super Bowl. And if you thought that guys were being careful before, I can't even imagine how careful guys are going to be now to try to hope that COVID doesn't knock them out of the Super Bowl, given how hard you work to be able to play in the Super Bowl. But the coaching for both the Packers and for the Bills. Now, look, I think the Packers have a better team than the Bucks do. So I think it stings more for Packer fans this morning waking up that Matt LaFleur and the Packers fell apart at the end of the first half and late in the game in terms of the choices that they made as a coaching staff than it does for the Bills. Because I think even if the Bills had played a perfect game, the Chiefs are just better than they are, right? The Chiefs are, I believe, what I agree with a lot of you, and this was my pick before the season started, I thought the Chiefs adding Clyde Edwards-Helaire were going to be better this year than they were last year. They've won 25 of their last 26 games with Patrick Mahomes starting at quarterback. They are playing at a level we've rarely seen anyone play at in the history of the NFL. So, look, that is all well and good. So, I don't think the Bills had a very good chance to win this game regardless, but you're certainly not going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs kicking field goals as often as the Bills did, particularly not kicking field goals inside of the inside of goal-to-go situations, which they did a couple of times as well. Having said that, I was frustrated by Sean McDermott's play calling because I didn't think it was as aggressive as it should have been. He's also still got a young quarterback. I thought Josh Allen showed his youth and frustration when he got tackled and he threw the football at the guy tackling him and all that stuff. There's no doubt that that was an incredibly frustrating moment for Josh Allen. But the decision-making of Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers, I can't get past it because you were, I really do believe this, the better team. I think if the Packers and the Bucks played 100 times, let's say, I think that the Packers probably win 60 of those games, maybe even 65. I think the Packers are substantially better than the Bucks. Doesn't mean the Bucks aren't a good football team. They are. But I think if they played 100 times, I think the Packers win 65 times. I think if the Bills played against the Chiefs 100 times, I think they might win 15, maybe 20. They're substantially, the Bills are substantially worse than the Chiefs, right? So I think all of that factors in a big way here. But the end of the half defense for the Packers was inexcusably bad. And in that scenario, when Tony Dungy is calling out your defenses, we'll ask Coach Jeff Fisher about this in a little bit. We'll ask Sean Merriman about this. How do you let that happen? How do you let someone just run past you and score a touchdown to end the half? It is incomprehensibly bad. And I know there's a lot of focal point on everything that had to happen in that game late. And we're going to get to that here momentarily. But to me, if I am a Green Bay Packer fan, if I am Matt LaFleur waking up this morning and you told me, hey, you can change one play from that game, I think the play that the Packers would want to change is the touchdown that they gave up at the end of the first half, because it just shouldn't have happened. It just shouldn't. It required such a series of errors that it should have never been able to happen for any football team in America. Like, if you had that happen to your high school team, you would be mad at your high school defensive coordinator and your high school defensive backs. If you're a college football fan and that happened, you would be furious at the defense that your team was in that situation as well. It reminded me a little bit, sorry Georgia Bulldog fans, of the touchdown that Tua threw to win the national championship to Devontae Smith, who at the time was, I believe, a true freshman wide receiver. Georgia was in a bad defense, and Devontae Smith just ran right by the corner, caught the touchdown for the win. And if I'm not mistaken, that was like a second or third and 26, because Tua had just taken a really bad sack. I was standing on the sideline watching that game down in, I believe the game was in Atlanta. I think the national title game was in Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken. Georgia Bulldog fans going crazy, trying to win their first national title since 1980. And boom, Tua made himself a legend. Devontae Smith, we knew he was probably pretty good if he was making that play as a true freshman. Then he goes on to win the Heisman Trophy, rides off into the sunset with a phenomenal performance against the Ohio State Buckeyes. But when you look at that situation, to me, that's the play where coaching failed. All systems failure for the Green Bay Packers there. And by the way, I didn't like the play calling when they got the ball back to end the first half before the Aaron Rodgers interception. It felt to me like the Packers were trying to get that game into halftime. They weren't using their timeouts. They weren't making, it didn't seem to me, very aggressive plays to try to go get points when you've got Aaron Rodgers like you should have been. But then the decision, late in the fourth quarter, fourth and eight, down eight, you decide to kick the field goal and give Tom Brady the football back, and you never give the ball back to Aaron Rodgers. I don't care what the analytics say. In that particular scenario, you have a Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. Fourth down and eight to go for potentially the tie. You got to get the two-point conversion, granted. But you have an opportunity there. If you fail, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers take back over the ball at the eight-yard line inside of their own 10. You still have the two-minute warning and three timeouts. And you probably could get a stop there and get the ball back and be in decent field position. Instead, you kick the field goal and you know that you're going to have to get a stop on Tom Brady, something that I don't think anyone out there expected to happen. I bet if you looked at him in the way he looked on the sideline, something that Aaron Rodgers 100% did not expect to happen either. And so that is brutal. I don't know how you can make that decision as a coach. And if I'm Aaron Rodgers, it drove me absolutely insane. All right, we're going to talk to Sean Merriman about exactly that here momentarily as we continue to break down the AFC and the NFC Championship game.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by Sean Merriman, Lights Out podcast with the iHeartRadio podcast network. And Sean, I thought coming into this season, maybe Brady plays this year, maybe he plays another year. After watching this season with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm like, this dude's going to play till he's 50 years old. And I know he didn't have a spectacular game, but when you look at the whole aspect to go on the road, win three games out of the wild card, now get to play at home in 2 weeks, it's an unbelievable accomplishment by Tom Brady, isn't it?
You know, when he said a couple of years ago that he wanted to play till he was, you know, 45, 46 years old. You know, I just thought he was just talking crazy. I really did. It didn't sound possible, right? I mean, we've seen some guys playing to their early 40s, you know, Drew Brees and Brett Favre, some of these guys. But as you see how Drew Brees finished up the season, didn't play well, whether that was injury or age, I really believe he can play till he's 46 years old. And he probably can play well because of how he's playing now. He's not getting hit as much. You know, he's learning how now to move around in a pocket. He's moving better right now than he did 5 or 6 years ago. And that's just kind of crazy to say. And as long as they keep those pieces around him in Tampa, why not? I just, you know, why not? Why not play to you 45, 46 years old?
Is he the great – we talked about this earlier in the show. In your mind, I think the greatest quarterback of all time, there's no argument anymore, right? I mean, that ship has sailed. Maybe in 10 years, if Patrick Mahomes continues to play like he is, maybe we can end up 15 years having a debate between those two, or maybe somebody else is going to come up and start to have a level of success that we don't anticipate otherwise. But is there any doubt now about him being the greatest quarterback of all time? And I think he's ascended to the point now where you can argue he's the greatest American sports team athlete of all time.
100%. And, you know, it was funny because I've played against him, and obviously I've always had my thing against the Patriots, right? I mean, they sent us home out of many playoffs and stopped our Super Bowl, things like that. So I've always had my gripes there. But I also always believed Tom Brady's greatness was partly due to Bill Belichick.
That's right.
And, you know, having an owner and an organization and how they just put all the pieces to the puzzle every single year. I was wrong. You know, I was wrong, man. I just now seeing what he's doing in another organization, another team, another conference, another setting, and older, there's not even a doubt, not even a 1% chance that he's the GOAT. But I'll take it a step further. I don't think there's anybody even close. Like, you start naming your top three quarterbacks of all time, I don't even put anybody in a category with him and how he's performing and how he's playing. You know, if he does go and win a ring, and he still has a chance to go in the, you know, the next 1 or 2 years to win another one, we will never. And, you know, I hate to say never because never is the word that always comes back and bites you in the ass a little bit, right? But we will never see another performance, another quarterback like Tom Brady again in this lifetime.
I agree with you. And to kind of put into context how long he has been doing this, I saw a stat and I was like, this is amazing. Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes on the other side in the AFC Championship game, they were in kindergarten when Tom Brady played in his first Super Bowl. I mean, if that doesn't blow your mind out there for everybody who is listening to us right now, kindergarten, he's been in the pros. He was in the Super Bowl since they were in kindergarten. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know what? A lot of these guys still got on diapers playing against him. I mean,
yeah,
you know, that's the way he's making people look. And, you know, he also went against another quarterback who we also look at as great, as one of the greatest. You know, he went against a guy who in 10 years from now, or 15 years, will be still calling him one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game in Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, with that being said, man, and the way he's winning and his level and intensity. I mean, at some point in time, right? And I watched the Conor McGregor fight the other night. I always felt like, okay, you got enough money, you got your family, your attitude and your demeanor starts to change when you reach a plateau in your life. I mean, it happens to the best of everybody. Your mentality changes just a little bit, and nothing changed about Tom. You know, it's not the fame, it's not the money, it's not all the rings, the winning. You still see the intensity and the passion to went out there and go and dominate that you've seen 10 or 15 years ago. And that to me, you know, kind of being a former athlete and, you know, playing ball my whole entire life, you get to a point where you're like, oh, okay, well, you did this, you did that, you did that. So your attitude, mentality changes over the course of time. And to see him still now compete and want to win as bad as he did 10 or 15 years ago is amazing, man. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that.
All right, let's go to the other side, Aaron Rodgers. In the post-game press conference, him talking about yesterday's loss, you could just hear it in his voice. how much this is going to weigh on him and how incredibly difficult it is going to be. When you think you're on a team that's good enough to win a championship and it doesn't happen, what does that feel like in the NFL? What is that feeling like right after the game? You're dressing, you're in the shower, you talk to the media. I mean, I imagine you feel a little bit like you're in a fog because, to your point, yes, you can be successful, you can be making a lot of money, all those things, but the competitor in you is so desperate to win that I imagine it is just, I think Aaron Rodgers described it as a gut punch to get to play at home. You know, he fully expected to win that game. He prepared to win that game. He was expecting to be getting ready to go down to Tampa and try to win a Super Bowl. And when you're younger, I imagine you lose a game, you think, oh, I'll be back there again. I'm sure for Aaron Rodgers, he's sitting around right now thinking, this may never happen for me again. You know, I may never get to another Super Bowl, just like Brett Favre did. It's been a decade. He's had opportunities to get back. He hasn't done it. I'm not sure that he'll have another one. What do you think he felt like?
You know, a gut punch is a good word to describe it. But, you know, when you lose those type of games, you start to look back at the off-season programs, training camps, the times that you had to go out there and practice and you just didn't feel like it because something was hurting or your ankle was swollen or you had a tight lower back or your hamstrings and knees were bugging you and you forced yourself to go out there. You start looking at every single thing over the course of the year that took you to get there, and that failure is right as a gut punch, and his heart has to be in his socks right now, just him walking around knowing that that they may not have a chance to get back there. That's one of the things that I always said about my career, and then also, you know, playing with guys like the Danian Thomas and the Phillip Rivers, and we had an all-star squad, and we were so good at a young age that we always felt that we had an opportunity to get back there. And then you start to realize that you have this short run of 2 to 4 years or somewhere in between there where your team could be really good, and you don't know if that team is ever going to be assembled like that again. And I think Aaron Rodgers alluded to that. He said exactly he doesn't know who's going to be here. Guys got contract disputes, maybe get cut, new coaching staffs, or, you know, just new personnel is going to be there. And you don't know that those guys are still going to be around. And I think also the second part of that is, I go back to saying this, that they brought in another quarterback.
Yeah.
And whether that's for Love to get on the field right now or 2 years from now, whatever that situation being, that had to bother Aaron Rodgers. It had to. And for him to go out and have one of the best seasons ever and not make it, well, you started to look back at, well, maybe you could have got us a first-round defensive back. I mean, King played terrible.
Yes.
King was getting roasted. They kept picking on him the whole entire time. So maybe you go out and draft a cornerback or slot something to give him some extra help. And they didn't do that because that's what they needed this game. King single-handedly really killed these guys in multiple different ways. And if you look back at the opportunity to go get a big-name defensive back or a big-name safety or something that can go out and help you to go and win a championship, that's what really hurts. That hurts you at the end of the day more than anything else.
When you see the it's kind of fascinating, the end game scenario, because a lot of people, and we'll get to this in a sec, the decision to kick the field goal instead of go for it on fourth down. But the end of the first half in that scenario as a defensive player, I don't know what exactly the play call was, but you're a smart defensive player, and so much of any smart athlete is playing scenarios and situations. It seems to me, I mean, it looked almost like Greg Williams at the end of the game against I guess it was the Raiders, and when he got fired by the Jets. Why in the world would you be in that defense? I went back and watched it. They were playing man, it looked like, on both of the wide sides of the field, right? And, I mean, whether or not you should ever let that guy behind you, why would you ever be in that perspective? I believe there were 6 seconds left, and the Bucs had no timeouts. So if you do anything basically other than if you just tackle him on the field, any player, the half's out, you give up no more points. To me, that was where the game was lost for the Packers in many ways.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that starts from the top. It starts from the coach. You can't put your players in bad situations like that. But also, I'll go back to King. any, and this is football 101. This is not, you know, just because I played the National Football League. No, this is high school level scenario situations. When it's that much time on the clock, you're going into the half, you keep everything in front of you, period. You don't let anything behind you. You don't care if you get beat for a 15 or 20 yard pass, but you cannot let it go for 30 plus. You get a guy on the ground, push him out of bounds, live to fight another day. So you go back and you're going to sit there. I'm sure Aaron Rodgers is going to watch the film tonight on the plane. However he's getting home. He's going to watch that film tonight. He's not going to wait till tomorrow. And he's going to play that single play over and over and over. And those two or three mistakes that happened in that game that changed the course of them winning that football game. And he's right. It's a real gut punch because they had that game. I don't think Tampa made some key plays, and I think Tom played extremely well, but it was really two or three plays in that whole game that decided the outcome.
It really is, and for the Aaron Rodgers of the world, do you think that he will be sitting back eventually when he has time to contemplate everything? Knowing that Jordan Love's there on the sideline, that they drafted a first rounder, he said all the right things during the course of this season. But would it surprise you if he decided that he wants to go elsewhere and finish his career somewhere else? Because he could look at a guy like Tom Brady and say, hey, I think I've got three or four more years, right? If I had the ability like Brady did, I know he's not a free agent, but to survey the field and see all of the possibilities, Matthew Stafford's going to do it. Deshaun Watson's going to do it. I mean, there are some really big-time playmaking quarterbacks who could be interested in moving on. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think we're seeing more of this than we ever have in the National Football League, right? Guys forcing their way out and letting it be known, hey, I want to be on the move. It's the closest thing that the NBA has been for years, right?
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson was public about it. Even though Aaron Rodgers didn't say it, it sure as hell sounded like he was public about it. And whether or not he is, making it vocal or let it be known that Love being drafted was a problem, it was. And I can tell you that being a former player, got drafted in your position, it's a problem because that's a team that's not saying, hey, we need depth at this position. It's not a wide receiver or cornerback in case somebody gets hurt. You drafted the guy early on. That means you want him to come and take your job. And now you got a coach that comes in and kicks a field goal or when he shouldn't, right, and try to put more points on the board. And you have him calling bad defenses in different situations. You know, now you're just wasting one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Now you're just wasting his years by not giving him just that extra push. Help him out. This guy's had an amazing year. He's done so much for that organization, and you didn't do much for him and put him in situations to win. So, I'm curious to see what's going to happen, but it sure as hell sounded to me that he wanted his way out.
What do you think about the decision to kick the field goal late in that Packers game against the Bucs? Fourth down from the 8-yard line, kick the field goal, you're hoping to get the ball back. I always say, and I said earlier in this show, as a general rule, if the opposing team is excited about the choice that you have made, then you probably shouldn't do it. And I know there are a lot of people out there who are fans of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers probably listening to me right now. Like, as soon as they took Aaron Rodgers off the field and said, yeah, we want to make it a 5-point game, they were ecstatic. What would you have thought from a player perspective? And I know you can talk about analytics and everything else, but one analytical thing I don't want to do is give Tom Brady the ball over the last 20 years with a chance to get a first down or two and never give my guy a chance to get the ball back. What would you be thinking on the field, and what would you have thought after the game when you had more time to think about it?
You know, Clay, I've been on the other side of that, right? Giving Tom Brady 2 minutes with the ball back in his hand, and we're up, right? And so if we're down, we don't have a chance because you're not getting the ball back from Tom Brady with two minutes left. You're just not. If you're in a team just kind of scratching your head, trying to figure out what in the hell you're thinking, then I understand that coaching is not easy, right? I mean, you got 30 seconds to make a play call in certain situations and every scenario, but we're going back to football 101. You got the greatest quarterback of all time on the opposite side of you. The chances are that he's going to do something really good with the football. And the second part of it is, I think we heard in the press conference where Aaron Rodgers saying, that wasn't my decision. That wasn't my decision. He didn't defend the coach. He didn't defend that call. He said that I was not a part of that decision. And I think that you know, Aaron Rodgers, he makes, you know, he has like this dry comedy thing about him, right? He has this thing where he talks, he kind of subliminally says certain things, and it's funny, you can interpret it certain ways. But one thing that he is he's upfront and he's honest. He speaks things when they come up. And when he said that he wasn't a part of that decision, meaning that, hey, I wouldn't have called this. I wouldn't have this was against my will, and I wouldn't have done this. I don't feel good about this. So that just, you know, that just lets me know, man, there's some problems there. And I'm not saying it's a problem with him and the coach or the organization, but there's something going on there. And I really expect Aaron Rodgers to somehow, some way be on the move after this year.
All right, so looking ahead, now we've got 2 weeks to talk about it, 13 days, whatever the heck it is. Kansas City Chiefs, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How do you assess, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again before this matchup actually happens, but early read from you. First question, is it impactful to be able to play from home? How much of an advantage? We've never seen this happen in the Super Bowl before. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're already back down in Tampa. They know they have to go nowhere. They get to work out exact same routine as normal. They're literally next door practicing to the football field. How much can that actually be an advantage in your mind to be able to play the Super Bowl at home?
Well, it's a great advantage, but, you know, those guys are going to have to be extremely disciplined, right? Because when you're playing at home, that means you're going to be there, you know, the weeks leading up to it. You got family and friends and everybody trying to be a part of what you're doing. And so you really have to be disciplined. And I think that with Tom Brady being there, he's really going to be the enforcer, right? I mean, you know, grabbing guys up, you can't go out too late. No, you know, curfew. I mean, there's going to have to be something in place here because there's a ton of distractions leading up to those weeks. And this is the busiest week of some of those guys' lives. And everybody's going to be pulling at you. Interviews, I want you to come out to this place, you know, and so much going to be involved. So it's really how disciplined those guys can be. And I'm not talking about I don't want to get to the fan aspect and playing in front of your home crowd. All those things are great. But I'm talking about leading up to the game, playing in your city. I can only imagine the type of distractions that's going to happen and things that they have to deal with leading up to the game. So whoever the leaders are, and I want to point to Tom Brady because I think that we heard a lot after they won at the press conference when they were on the field, and Coach Arian saying, look, Tom Brady came in with an attitude and changed his culture. You know, he's been a leader and a vocal leader, and he's going to have to be that leading up to this game in order to keep those guys on track.
You said it. I've said it. There are one of the great debates for sports for the last 20 years has been who's more responsible for the New England Patriot dynasty, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick. I didn't think there was any way that in this year we would find an answer to that question. I'm sure even for normal fans, this was a debate. I bet among NFL players, sometimes you guys would get together and debate that as well. It's kind of a foregone conclusion now, isn't it? With Brady going to the Bucs, winning 3 road games with them in year one, and it's not like he went to a team with some incredible culture of winning in the NFC, you know, that had been there year after year after year. It almost feels like he single-handedly willed them there.
You've never seen this in the NFL. You've never seen one guy go to an organization and flip the script as he did. We've never seen it. We've seen it in the NBA. You know, LeBron goes to a team. You know they're going to win a lot of games. You know, you're going to have James Harden go somewhere. They're going to win. Oh, KD. Someone goes where they're going to win a lot of games. We've never seen in the NFL one guy go to an organization and flip everything they've done. And like I said, I hate saying and using the words never because those are extreme words. But I just don't think we'll never see anything like it. We just won't. I mean, Tom Brady, for years, and playing against him, I've always worried about not only playing Tom Brady, but going there playing and coaching from the mind of Bill Belichick and him, you know, being able to switch, you know, audible in games and switch up, you know, some of the things they don't make an in-game adjustments. Those are all coming from Bill Belichick. What we're seeing now is that Tom Brady was the key to their success. And because he was there for so long and winning, Bill Belichick took a lot of their credit for it. I mean, they didn't have him this year. Look what's happening to the team. Tom Brady's gone. He's gone to another organization. Look what he's done there. So if you look at it across the board, man, I just, you know, to call him a GOAT is really it's not enough, right? Because, you know, we got a lot of the greatest of all time and things, but you got to make up, I don't know what that word is for Tom at this point, going to another, you know, conference. going to another team, another coach, another organization, and winning just as he did for 20 years somewhere else. We got to figure out a new word for Tom. I don't know what it is yet, but we can figure it out.
We're talking to Sean Merriman, Lights Out Podcast. Last question for you, and it's not football. I watched Conor McGregor fight and I know you're a big UFC guy as well, and I know a lot of our listeners are. What did you see from the McGregor fight? How much, if anything, does he have left in UFC in your mind?
Well, you know what, Clay, watching that fight and kind of being around Conor's camp and knowing where he trained and knowing his trainer, team, and staff and everybody that's around him, he trained hard as hell. He looked great walking into the fight. It wasn't a lack of training. But I can tell you right now, when you get kicked that much in your leg, and especially in your calf and your front leg, you can't put that thing down. Because to describe exactly what it feels like your leg is swelling up with blood. And you put it in the ground, but it's not giving you anything back, almost like you're a peg leg. And so once I seen that he got a nice calf kicks in there, and I've been there, I've got my ass kicked a few times, got my legs kicked, and you just cannot put that leg in the ground anymore, you're almost destined to sit down and eat punches. There's nothing you can really do. I thought that, you know, Dustin put together a hell of a game plan, the fight plan against him. And give him credit. You know, he got whipped the first time around. He came back with a different mentality. He got much better as a fighter. He had more time in the octagon, and he was ready to go. I got no doubt in my mind that Conor will be back with a big splash, and he'll be back on top, and now it might take him a year or so to do it. But he's not done by a long shot.
Sean Merriman, appreciate you, my man. We'll talk to you maybe next week, a little bit of Super Bowl preview. But in the meantime, enjoy things.
You got it. You too.
That's Sean Merriman, Lights Out Podcast with the iHeart Podcast Network.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Thanks to Sean Merriman. We're scheduled, by the way, to be joined by Jeff Fisher to start off the third hour of the program. Former Rams and also Titans coach will be breaking down the AFC and the NFC championship game with him, all headed this way. Remember, you can call Farmers today for a quote. So I think of all the amazing stats about Tom Brady and him going to a 10th Super Bowl, the most amazing stat is that the two quarterbacks who were competing in the AFC championship game to try and beat him were both in kindergarten the first time that Tom Brady played in the Super Bowl. I mean, you want to talk about how amazing that is to think about. Kindergarten, the first time that Brady was in the Super Bowl. So this is going to be a big discussion, obviously, for the next 2 weeks. So we talk about Tom Brady going up against Patrick Mahomes. I think the NFL gets the absolute best matchup they could possibly dream of. The greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL going up against the heir apparent. And you could also say the hair apparent, H-A-I-R, because obviously with all those State Farm commercials, Patrick Mahomes has got some great hair. But as you break down this, Mahomes is now in his second Super Bowl. He's now 25 years old. He will turn 26 in September. What should the over-under at this point in his career be for the number of Super Bowls that Patrick Mahomes will play in his entire career? Now, let me give you a little bit of context. Brady's obviously in 10. The second most Super Bowls, I believe I am correct in this, Dub, that anybody has ever played in is John Elway played in 5. No one else, maybe Joe Montana. Did Joe Montana play in 5 as well? I don't think anybody else has played in more than 5 Super Bowls. So right now, Brady has doubled everybody else in terms of the number of Super Bowls that they have played in. Mahomes is at 2 by the age of 25. If I set the number at 6, over under 6 Super Bowls that Patrick Mahomes will play in, would you go over or under that number, Dub, with the context understanding that Mahomes would then be guaranteed, if he got to 6 or more, to have played, maybe I should say 5.5, because setting it at 5.5 would mean that he would have more Super Bowl appearances than anybody else in the history of the NFL. What would you say, Dub? Would you go over or under 5.5? He's obviously at 2 now, so he would need 4 more in his career. The thing about him is he's a pocket passer, so the odds are that he's going to be able to have a lot of longevity in the NFL. We look at guys like Brady, 43, who knows how long he's going to play. Drew Brees, 41, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers. All of those guys are quintessential pocket passers who played well into their upper 30s. How many more Super Bowls does Patrick Mahomes go to?
Well, I was going to set the number at 6.5.
So you're going over.
I'm going over because you think about it, and we've talked about this recently on the show. Who's his competition in the AFC right now? It's nobody.
There's a lot of young quarterbacks, but nobody who seems anywhere near his level.
So that's one of the biggest factors to me, because I think Andy Reid's going to stick around for this ride. I mean, he's not the youngest of coaches, but when you get a guy like Patrick Mahomes on your team and you're Andy Reid, he's gonna coach this team for a fairly long time, I would imagine. So I think he's going to get to probably 7 Super Bowls would be my guess.
I mean, that's an incredible – so you're betting – that he's going to be the second best quarterback of all time behind Tom Brady right now.
Yes, I am.
We're going to be talking about this for the next 2 weeks and probably for the next 15 years, to be honest, because at some point Brady's going to ride off into the sunset, maybe at the age of 50. But, man, I cannot wait to see what's going to happen in this game. All right, when we come back, we are scheduled to be joined by Jeff Fisher, former Titans and Rams NFL coach. What did he think about both these games? What does he think about Brady coaching against him? What does he think about Mahomes? And would he be interested in coaching again? All that's still to come. Jeff Fisher joins us next, former NFL coach. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.